Welcome to the Animation Podcast, an official podcast of Filmbook. The Animation Podcast is a weekly animation news podcast that reports on the latest animation movie and TV show news.
All right, there's a fly the size of Jeff Goldblum hovering around my head right now, so don't be surprised if at one point it swoops me up during the podcast, throws me aside, and takes over hosting for me. Hey there, welcome back to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Ephraim Burney. If you're tuning into the Animation Podcast for the first time, what I do on this podcast is discuss the current week's animation news. Find more The Animation Podcast episodes on Filmbook, that's film-book.com, by using the term Animation Podcast in the search bar. If you're listening to this podcast on iTunes or another podcasting service, please rate and review the episode. If you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, please like the video, consider subscribing, and consider becoming one of our patrons on Patreon.com at patreon.com/filmbook. Your support helps us create even more engaging content. And speaking of content, boy oh boy, do we have a lot for you today. I don't know what happened this week where every studio decided to just throw every trailer they had at us, but boy, we got a lot, and we're gonna talk about as many of them as we can here. In tippy-top news, the trailer that is tearing the internet apart and taping a funny little name on its cover is The Diary of a Wimpy Kid animated movie, which dropped its trailer this week, and folks far and wide have been reacting. From what I've seen generally, the response seems to be pretty optimistic, though. Of course, there are diehard fans of the series that have already voiced their complaints about the designs or redesigns, particularly of Roderick. The strange thing here is the designs are pretty much a one-to-one recreation of the original illustrations. So the people that are mad because they don't look like the live-action versions. Regardless, the trailer and movie both look pretty fun. The jump from 2D to 3D will certainly be an interesting one. The style seems to be going for something kind of like the Peanuts movie or Captain Underpants. The story looks as though it will stick strictly to the first book's narrative, which is the one I'm most familiar with. Just from looking at it, I think I might be a bit more intrigued by the faithful kind of recreations of the doodles from the book than in the actual film's animation as of right now. It could be that this is just early on, but there's something about the pure black little dot eyes that seem almost menacing in 3D. If you know what, if you've seen this, maybe you're thinking, it just might just be me. But like, even in the Peanuts movie or the Captain Underpants movie, since we're comparing it to those, you at least saw like a small sliver of light reflected in the black dot eyes. These on Greg and Rowley and what, these eyes are like brimstone black. It feels like the characters' heads are hollow and you're just looking in on nothing on the inside. Oh, it's spooky for the spooky season. Now, you can watch the trailer for yourself and see what you think. The film stars Brady Noon, Ethan William Childress, and gosh, I really hope I say this right because he's working all the time now, Chris Diamantopoulos, and will be directed by Swinton Scott, who cut his teeth in The Graining Empire of Futurama and The Simpsons. You can catch it on Disney Plus on December 3rd. But the trailer talk does not end there, folks. We're going to look at what our big players, Disney, DC, Netflix, HBO Max, all those big boys, what they have released for us this week to take a look at. Netflix gave us a little look-see at the fifth season of Big Mouth. In typical Big Mouth fashion, the trailer teases us with a new monster that will shape the overall theme of the upcoming season. This time around, we get two contrasting creatures, the love bug and the hate worms. I've been watching the show consistently since it first came out, and while I was a really big fan earlier on, I kind of fell off the wagon. I still watched it all, fell off the wagon like I was addicted. I was recovering. I fell off the wagon I fell off the love train pretty early, earlier on. I couldn't help but feel like this show had sort of suffered a bit of an identity crisis this last season in particular. I think there's an obvious thing in that they lost Jenny Slate, though Ayo Edebiri is really taking over that and doing a great job. I've actually met her before, and she's a total sweetheart and a very, very smart writer. It's more for me that the show felt, more than ever, that it was trying very hard to give us more of what we loved about those first two and a half seasons. And it was doing that so hard that it lost why we watched these characters in the first place. It's just all of a sudden there was a song in every episode when there really didn't need to be one, and there were characters that Nick Kroll did in season one that were coming back, and they were one-off things before, and now they're learning lessons, they're more deeply involved. I don't know, it just felt like everything was playing at itself. Regardless, this time, moving forward, it seems as though this season is going to be promising us a lot more kind of interpersonal relationships between the cast of characters, which I think could be pretty interesting. Looks like Nick likes Jesse, and they're kind of doubling down on that, and Jesse might have a thing with Ali Wong's character, it looked like. I have to look at the trailer again. I'm excited to see Matthew and Lola fight over Jay. That's like, those are my three favorite characters in the show. So that could all be pretty good. Plus, they've given us a few glimpses of what appears to be a holiday puppet episode, which, it's not exactly a novel concept, but this could be pretty exciting to see how the writers play in that different medium. I think that could really lend itself well to what they do well. The new episodes premiere on November 5th, and I will probably try and review it at some point. Over at the House of Mouse on Disney+, we got a quick look at a new series of shorts, Olaf Presents. The series comes out on November 12th and appears to be a solely a show consisting of Olaf from Frozen attempting to tell abridged versions of Disney classics. I guess everyone in the focus group for Frozen 2 loved the sequence when Olaf recaps the first one so much that they just thought they ought to make a whole show out of it. So if you were worried that you'd have to wait another 10 years or so before Disney attempts to make another Lion King remake for virtual reality or something, maybe, you can rest easy knowing that Olaf will give you that shot of nostalgic dopamine. Jennifer Newfield is producing the shorts, and the 5 episodes will be directed by Olaf's animation supervisor, Hiram Osmond. But if you're looking for something different for your kids, you might not need to look further than Apple TV's Harriet the Spy. The world got a look at the kids' novel-turned-television series this week, and we'll get to see the whole shebang on November 19th. The series follows Harriet, an aspiring child writer and reporter who turns to a life of spying and quote-unquote espionage in an attempt to get a new perspective on the world around her. Harriet will be voiced by Beanie Feldstein, who must have the world's greatest manager, because it feels like this gal is in a new project every 15 seconds. Go, Beanie! Harriet seems to be your typical plucky girl on a mission protagonist, and seems to be anchored by two best friends, though it's kind of hard to tell, get a read on exactly what their personalities are going to be from the trailer. The animation style has a quiet edge to it that I like, and at least from what we see, there will be adventures that seem even wilder than those in the books. It looks like they go to space at one point and something like that. Might not be a revolutionary kid show, but fans of the novel or the 90s movie version will probably want to check this one out. On the other end of the Disney spectrum, we took a break and now we came on back, Marvel has bestowed us with the trailer for Hitmonkey, which will come crashing onto Hulu guns a-blazing on November 17th. The show follows a snow monkey turned hitman who partners up with a ghost version of Jason Sudeikis to avenge his massacred tribe against the Yakuza. Also slated to star are Olivia Munn and George Takei and a whole bunch of other great folks. Hitmonkey is the second slated show to surface out of Marvel TV's planned adult animation quadrilogy. Not sure if that's a word, but it comes hot off the heels of MODOK. The other two shows, Tigra and Dazzler and Howard the Duck, currently live in limbo, with neither Hulu or Disney openly communicating any plans to move forward with them. However, Hitmonkey seems much more confident in its tone than MODOK ever really was, that being kind of balls-to-the-wall violence peppered with a bit of that signature Marvel dry wit. The show is the brainchild of creators Josh Gordon and Will Speck. You know them from their comedies like Blades of Glory. They're executive producing with Marvel veteran and comic book icon Joe Quesada. Hope Joe, if you're listening, let me know how you say your name. I'll tell you how to say mine when you do. And the animation will be coming from Floyd County Productions in Atlanta. I think this one could be promising. We'll have to wait and see what they do. And since we're already talking about Disney and more Disney, in an interesting new move from Walt's Frozen Head, Disney Plus announced that it is doubling down on anime production, likely as a part of their push to draw in audiences worldwide as the streaming platform opens up outside of the States. The news comes hot on the heels of Warner Media's announcement that Cartoon Network will start producing its own anime, which in and of itself was likely a response to Sony acquiring Crunchyroll. So this means that within the next few years, anime fans can expect an onslaught of new American-made titles targeted specifically at Japanese audiences. Now, Disney has revealed four of the new shows that they have slated for development. An animated adaption of Yasuki Tanaka's hit manga thriller Summertime Rendering, to be directed by Ayumu Watanabe. The story focuses around a young man named Shinpai, hope I'm saying that right, who returns to his hometown after the mysterious death of someone from his past. After that, we have a spin-off series from the popular noir-esque fantasy series Black Rock Shooter, aptly titled Black Rock Shooter Dawnfall. We don't know how much, if any, of the original show will be showcased in this new one. All we know from the concept art is that there's a girl with a glowing blue eyes. Look at the art yourself, you'll see it's blue. And she's got black hair, and she's falling through the sky with what looks like the Batmobile. It's obviously not the Batmobile, but I also don't know enough to say it couldn't be the Batmobile. Next, we have an anime adaptation of Twisted Wonderland, which is an app and mobile game developed by Walt Disney Japan and Aniplex. I looked this up because it sounded like fan fiction to me, but it's real. It's a game for your phone where your player character gets sucked into a magical world where you befriend anime student versions of classic Disney villains as you attempt to make your way back home. It's apparently very popular, so I imagine this show will do very well for itself. Lastly, we have a sequel series to the Tatami Galaxy called Tatami Time Machine Blues. This series will be directed by Shingo Natsumi and produced by Science Saru Production Company. Again, no idea what of the original series will make its way into this one, but because it's being specified as a sequel and not a spinoff, we can probably expect to see more returning characters than we might in something like Black Rock. But let's move on to some countries that Disney hasn't gotten its little mouse paws in just yet. Let's take a look at animation from around the world. Really going hard on Disney today, huh, Ephraim? When it comes to animation around the world, the low-budget animated indie documentary Flea made practically half of Eastern Europe proud on Thursday with the announcement of its nomination for Best Documentary at the 31st Annual Gotham Awards. The Gotham Awards are the world's first kind of foray or step into award season, and they usually serve as a pretty good predictor of what the Oscars might narrow in on, which means that the Swedish/Danish/French/Norwegian animated movie has just cemented itself as a possible contender for Best Animation, Best Documentary, and Best Foreign Film. The documentary, an animation debut from filmmaker Jonas Boer Rasmussen, I hope that's how you say your name, pal, follows the story of Amin, a refugee from Afghanistan currently living in Denmark, who attempts to work through a lifetime's worth of suppressed memories and trauma in the hopes of imparting a secret that he's carried with him for a very long time. This movie looks pretty damn devastating, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Maybe I haven't said it on this podcast, but I think I have, that documentary and animation are really, really two connected symbiotic genres, and I am not surprised to see this get as much glory and praise as it's getting. I think it's such an exciting concept, and I wouldn't be surprised if we saw more fully animated documentaries premiering in the upcoming years. But if we were to take a plane ride over to India, we would see the premiere of Nickelodeon's first episode of its new series, Chiku Our Bunti, continuing its strives to capitalize on the growing market for children's television over there. The show centers around two brothers constantly competing for bragging rights and their parents' affection. This is the 11th show to spring out of Nickelodeon's Indian homegrown efforts, and it doesn't seem as though they have any plans on slowing down. It's a very exciting time if you're a kid in India right now. But even if you're not a kid in India, you can be excited about the recent news for home video and digital HD releases that we're going to cover right now. I couldn't even make my way through that transition there. In biggest home release news, this week we got DC's Injustice available for purchase on DVD and Blu-ray across the country. We also have Coppelia, the live-action animated ballet combo platter that wasn't just content to mix animation with live-action, but went as far as to blend together CGI with 2D as well. The movie comes to us from Shout Factory, and it's part of PBS for the Arts and their push to broaden the country's cultural zeitgeist. We also got word that both DVD and Blu-ray collector's editions of Miyazaki's Princess Mononoke and Porco Rosso will be readily available on November 29th, 2021 this year. And that Warner Bros. Catwoman Hunted will be available for purchase on 4K Blu-ray on February 8th of next year. And finally, last week I made fun of Disney's Free Guy starring Ryan Reynolds, but the joke is on me because this week it is topping the sales charts of DVD and Blu-ray home releases. So good on everybody involved. You really put spit in my eye there. But let's move on to the reason why you all are here, or at least the reason that I pretend that you guys are all here. You guys want to see me, hear me, review a movie or TV show in this case. A TV show that I am actually so excited about that I didn't even want to wait for the last episode to come out. That's how much I believe in it, and I want to get it on your radar. I am reviewing Aquaman, King of Atlantis, that came out on HBO Max earlier this month, and the latest episode just came out this week. First, some general information. It was created by Victor Courtwright and Marley Halpern-Grazer. Both of them worked on Mad Magazine's TV show. That's probably where they met. Courtwright has worked on Pickle and Peanut. Halpern-Grazer worked on Right Now Kapow. They've both worked on Thundercats Roar. They have extensive work together. And with this sort of kind of action comedy type thing, I think you'll see what I'm talking about in a bit. But it comes from executive producer James Wan from the live-action Aquaman, the director of such, and director of the Saw movies. He's got his own company, production company that he makes this stuff with. And this is their animation debut, and I think it is right out the bat, crack, home run. I really do. That's how much I am excited about this. The cast is Cooper Andrews. You know him from Shazam or The Walking Dead. Jillian Jacobs from Community or Netflix's Love. Thomas Lennon. You know him from The Odd Couple and Reno 911. You know this guy. Like, this guy is literally in everything. I feel bad limiting him to these two shows. And lastly, Dana Snyder, the man himself, the the Shake Master from Aqua Team and Gazpacho from Chowder. Now, look, in a lot of ways, Aquaman King of Atlantis feels like it was specifically made for me. The cast is full of actors I absolutely adore, playing to their strengths, and a creative team that knows and loves the source material, who are taking a risk with a more experimental kind of animation. A lot of you might look at Aquaman and kind of raise an eyebrow or two when I say experimental animation, but I can explain what I mean here. Aquaman King of Atlantis could have very easily looked a lot more like the more common digital 2D animation we see in action adventure stories. Something like what they did for Matt Thompson's America the Motion Picture or Netflix's Q-Force. Nothing wrong with those shows. I actually have a very soft spot for America the Motion Picture, but the animation mostly serves as a vehicle for the dialogue and the writing. With Aquaman, the character models are fluid. They can go from some pretty astounding detail to some very simplistic bare-bone doodles, and this heightens the expressiveness of each moment. It harkens back to something like early SpongeBob, or even something like Popeye. There's so much fun to be had in a little tiny look that two characters might share, or the way someone might exit a frame, the way their legs go up and down or side to side. It feels like these characters behave the way we feel we do in our own heads on the external, which really makes these comedic moments pop. And the jokes in the writing already didn't need help. The scripts are strong and leave plenty of room for the actors to make their own lines their own. There's a great joke in the first episode where Ocean Master, Aquaman's half-brother and like goofy cartoon nemesis in the show, attempts to dethrone him but after losing to him once already. And as punishment, because Aquaman just beats him up in one fell swoop, as punishment, they give him a room with a slightly less optimal view of the city. I think that's really, really funny. I'm not doing a great job describing it, but it's just great. The show fully commits to the tone of a goofy world that all the characters take to the utmost seriousness and sincerity. And the voices are great. Cooper Andrews makes for such a likable Aquaman, and his, pardon the pun, but fish-out-of-water vibe is really refreshing in a superhero character. Aquaman is awkward and kind of stupid, but it's literally because he's just become the king of the entire world that he's never lived in. That's a take on the character that makes sense, with him having been raised on the surface but still feels new and exciting. And Jillian Jacobs has such natural charm and charisma, it's insane. And she really gives Mera her full, I think it's Mera, her full range of wacky voices and quirks. Thomas Lennon is one of those actors that I really believe ought to be more of a household name with the amount of work that he does. And he is no less great here than he normally is as the belabored Volko. He's kind of like the assistant. They've turned him into sort of a secretary, which is really funny. And Dana Snyder is so instantly recognizable for me as Shake from Aqua Teen Team. So it's that might throw folks, but honest to God, his delivery is so funny. And he just totally captures the sort of vaudevillian baddie that Ocean Master requires here. Lastly, I want to talk about the action in it. It's really, really cool and fun to look at. Again, the way things are animated, the characters being stretchy and expressive, the punches really feel like they hit harder. And some of the choreographing just draws you right in. All the fight scenes feel as though they are coming at you like 100 miles an hour, and all you can do is watch and dodge when something's thrown your way. I could really talk at length on this one. I love the way the fish people look in the background. And these characters, these little background characters, have some of the best punchlines. The music is also phenomenal. Props to Matthew Jensen. You really gave each scene its own pulse and kinetic energy. I highly recommend you guys check this one out. It's currently on HBO Max and will air on Cartoon Network later in November, with its last episode premiering next week. Oh, I almost forgot. I got to give it a score. I want to give this one a 4 out of 5. Just because I don't know what the last episode's gonna be, but I'm sure I'm gonna love it too, and I think you would love it if you gave it a shot. Now it feels silly to do a recommendation after I just so wholeheartedly praised this show, so this week I'm gonna do a little something different. I'm breaking up my usual recommendation style in honor of Halloween and the trick-or-treat season. Since this is the week leading up to everyone's favorite spooky day, I wanted to give you 7 episodes of cartoons to really give you the heebie-jeebies and get you in the mood for some scares. Now, first up is a new favorite of mine, but one that I've been anticipating for a long time. The Zombies episode of Marvel's What If. Marvel Zombies is my favorite incarnation of the Marvel heroes. I remember reading the comics when they came out, finding each one randomly in bookstores, and reading the story out of order and then finally piecing together the storylines. I remember vividly not being able to sleep after some of these concepts and artworks that's contained within the story. I thought the story would make for a terrific series and movie, and I'm honestly surprised it's taken them as long as it has to dip their toes into it, but the fifth episode of Disney Plus's What If does not disappoint. I wholeheartedly say you should check it out. Second, we're taking a look back at Hot Topic's favorite cartoon, Invader Zim. It was either that or Nightmare Before Christmas, right? Now, you could pretty much put any episode of Invader Zim on a list like this, and it would likely find itself right at home, but I want to recommend a particular episode that I'm sure most of you are already thinking of. From episode 4 of season 1, Dark Harvest was, I believe, the episode that really showed all of us kids at the time that Invader Zim meant business. Most of you probably know this one already, is the one where Zim, in an effort to appear more human passing, hunts down his classmates and harvests their organs. This one is a classic for a reason. Its pacing and tone can be genuinely unnerving, and the final big reveal of what Zim has become really has a terrific payoff for first-time listeners. Viewers, I suppose. Check it out. Third, I want to pull an episode from my personal favorite show, or one of my personal favorite shows, Ed, Edd, and Eddy. There are a couple times when the kids from the cul-de-sac explore kind of darker and more menacing themes. The episodes that get a lot of attention for pulling something like this are ones like The Day the Ed Stood Still, where Ed turns into like the monster and starts hunting everyone down, which is it's a great one for sure, but I thought I'd shine a light on an episode which I think pulls this off just as well and doesn't get as much recognition. It's season five's two-part episode, The Eds Are Coming. What I liked about the later seasons of Ed, Edd, and Eddy was that they would sometimes shift the focus to the entire cast of characters working together or, like, battling it out. And in this one, that really comes to shine. They put the entire cast together, and they have to team up to survive what appears to be an alien invasion. It was part of Cartoon Network at the time was doing a big alien invasion thing where everything was spooky. It might have been a Halloween thing, if I don't know if I'm remembering it right, but a highlight from this one has got to be Jimmy's dream turned nightmare in the very beginning of the episode. It's actually pretty spooky. And the rest of the episode has a great, like, kind of aliens movie type aesthetic where they're all bunkering down. It's a good one. Another episode I feel like doesn't get as much love is my fourth pick, House of Discontent, Season 2, Episode 12 of Courage the Cowardly Dog. Courage is another one of those shows that really any episode could be on this list. And this episode finds Courage having to quickly grow crops in the backyard to appease a floating, disembodied, live-action black-and-white head. You've probably seen stills from this one before. And the contents of this episode aren't exactly the scary part, per se. Episodes like Freaky Fred have a more creepy vibe, and everyone knows the early CGI horror from ones like Perfect or King Ramsay's Curse. But to me, this episode always seemed strangely realer than the other ones. Maybe it's because the monster was an actual dude. Or maybe because the premise was as simple as, like, a voice demanding you to get out of your own home. But as a kid, this one really seemed like it could happen to me. So check it out. See if you got scary memories of that one. Yeah, it might just be me, but I liked it a lot. Fifth, I don't want to just bog us down with a list of shows from the 90s and 2000s, because I could do that all day. So I thought I'd recommend another modern Halloween take, The Trickening, the 10th episode of Season 3 of the DuckTales reboot. The Trickening is an episode of television that feels like a perfect homage to the Halloween and the holiday itself. It's certainly not the scarier one on this list, but the writing is very clever, which is usually the case with this show. It's really damn good. And there's a fun little twist at the end there that makes the episode worth revisiting once you've finished it. I would check it out. I don't want to spoil too much. Another modern classic, I want to pull an episode from Gravity Falls. Yeah, we all know I'm a big suck up to this show. just like practically everyone else, so I won't spend too much time singing its praises. I could pick Summerween or the Shapeshifter episode purely based on the monsters alone, but I actually want to recommend Northwest Mansion Mystery, the 10th episode of season 2, and personally one of my favorites of the whole series. This is the one that everyone likes to point at saying the show got so dark because it has like the skeleton ghost dude and the animal heads bleeding, but my personal favorite part of this episode is that we get a different side of Dipper. And we really get a fully characterized arc for Pacifica, a character that sort of instantly developed a fan following afterwards, and one who I think was totally underutilized in the latter half of season 2. And lastly, I hate to be that guy. I really do hate to be that guy, because it's going to be sort of disappointing. But I'm going to recommend the show that literally everyone is going to recommend you watch this time of year. But yeah, it's Over the Garden Wall. It really is that good. Everyone knows it's that good. It's the perfect for the season. It's the perfect show for the season. I watch it every October. The episodes are quick, but they're packed full of charm and autumnal vibes. And if you want to pick a particular recommendation, I'd say watch episode 7, The Ringing of the Bell, for a spooky treat. But honest to God, the whole series can be watched within like an hour and 45 minutes. It really is worth your time, and you should check it out. I think that's all the time I have for you today. Thank you for watching or listening or whatnot. It really means a lot. This is my third episode in, and I think I'm sort of starting to get the hang of it. So thank you for sticking with me, and more to come. Be sure to like this episode of the Animation Podcast and subscribe. You can find more of my work on Filmbook. That's film-book.com. Just search for Ephraim Burney or the Animation Podcast. You can learn how to spell my name in the article above. You can also find me on Twitter at Frumblers or on Instagram at Ephraim_Burney. Or Ephraim_Burning. Let me correct that. I've trolled myself now. If you would like to contact us, you can email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast as the subject line. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you for listening, and have a spooky day. Or spooky week. It's not Halloween yet, but have a spooky one regardless. I'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to the Animation Podcast. Find more of the Animation Podcast on Filmbook, on your favorite podcast service, and on YouTube.